three questions and you'll tell me which ones you want to discuss. First question I got last week. A fellow told me that 40 years ago, his wife's grandfather had commissioned the writing of a Sefer Torah. Shortly after the Sefer Torah was written, the Sefer Torah got stolen. About a year after it was stolen, they recovered the Sefer Torah and it was badly damaged. At the time, he sent the Sefer Torah somewhere to some sofer in Israel or something, and nothing happened. He never followed up with it. And now, about 3 years ago, this grandson-in-law of the fellow who commissioned the writing of the Sefer Torah got a call from a sofer. I have this Sefer Torah here for over 30 years. I don't know what you want me to do with it. You're the mishpacha. Tell me what you want me to do with it. So he said, how much will it cost to check and see what it would take to fix it, just to go through the whole thing and check it? He said, about $2,000-$3,000 just to go through it and check it. He said, yeah, do it, because this is a very valuable thing to me. Why was it so valuable to him? Because at the time that it got damaged 40 years ago, at the time that it was recovered from being stolen, almost 40 years ago, and it was so badly damaged, the grandfather had filed a claim with the insurance company that, you know, that the Sefer Torah was damaged. They said that they will honor the claim and they'll pay for the full value of the Sefer Torah, the full cost of the Sefer Torah, but only if he gives them the Sefer Torah. He has to give them the damaged, submit the damaged product, and then they'll pay for the full value. So he asked Shaila whether he's allowed to do that. He was told no. So he lost $50,000 just like that. The insurance company was going to pay $50,000, and you know, but he followed the psak halacha that he got, which is not to submit the Sefer Torah to the insurance company. And he lost. So the grandson-in-law views this as like a tremendous family heirloom, that this is a sign of what we do to be Oved Hashem, you know, that that we're like that. We drop $50,000, an opportunity to make back $50,000. I'm making up the number, but whatever the number is, it's significant because that's what the halacha requires. So he's willing. Grandson-in-law says $2,000-$3,000 is good. We'll go get a check. So they got a check. It's being checked. It was checked by the one of the best sofrim in Beit Shemesh, a very fine sofer. Although probably whatever sofer you use, someone will tell you it's one of the best sofrim. But no, but genuinely one of the best sofrim. Rabbi Mendelitz vouched for him that he's mamish, a really really good sofer. So he spent the $2,000-$3,000 analyzing the Torah, which was very challenging because the cloth was darker because of some of the damage that the cloth had gone through. And the results of the findings were the following. 25 columns had to be totally rewritten. There were 6 examples where the Shem Hashem was misspelled on the first in the Sefer Torah. That had nothing to do with damage. That just had to do with the first sofer not being up to snuff, the one who originally wrote the Torah. 6 examples where the Shem Hashem was misspelled. There are 5 times more spelling mistakes than a typical unchecked Sefer Torah would have. Typically, an unchecked Sefer Torah that's written by a superior sofer, Bizmanenu, would have 10 spelling mistakes before they do the computer check. An average one has about 50, and this one had 250 spelling mistakes throughout the Sefer. So there was a lot wrong with it. And the sofer said he can't be certain because there's no way to actually prove it, but he believes that there were several instances of what we call chak tochos. You familiar with chak tochos? Chak tochos is a psul in the Sefer Torah, but it's not detectable. It's when you have two letters that are connected to each other. I happen to have an Igros Moshe with me here. So the connection between the vav and the tav, you see that they're actually touching? That would passel the Sefer Torah if they were touching. So sometimes the sofer will write, he'll realize the ink is touching, so he'll just scrape out the ink in between. And that way, the vav and the tav will be proper letters because he scrapes out the ink in between. That passels the Sefer Torah, though, because then he didn't write the ksav. He didn't write the os. The os was created by his. What he would have to do is erase the os and rewrite it. So the sofer is saying he cannot prove that there's chak tochos, because how do you prove it? How do you know it? But he believes that there was. Sometimes you could tell just by the odd shaped ends of letters that it looks more like a scrape than it does, like it was made that way originally. Sometimes a little darkness, where it seems that ink used to be, little indicators like that. But he can't be sure about that. Now, given that, he then said to the Sofer, okay, what will it take to fix it, to make it a kosher Sefer Torah? So the Sofer said, there's no fixing the chatochos, obviously. There's nothing you can do about that, because you're not going to be able to find them, and you don't know where they are. So there's no fixing that, if it exists, but he has no proof that it exists. But as far as fixing everything else, about another $10,000, $7,500 to $10,000, to rewrite the missing columns and have all the mistakes corrected. Here's the shaila. The grandson wants to know, is he allowed to pay the money to do this, to fix the Sefer Torah? If he's not allowed to, can he take the Sefer Torah back and keep it in his house, if he as a possible Sefer Torah, or does he have to put it in Geniza? If he is allowed to, can he allow people to make a bracha and it can be put back into circulation and actually be used by the family? That is shaila number. So yeah, meaning, do you have to assume that it loses its cheskas kashrus and all the fixing that you're doing? You're just throwing money down the toilet. Not only throwing money down your toilet, you're putting apostle Sefer Torah back into circulation. You'd be machshel people in this or bracha levatala anytime you say a bracha on it. What? Because of chashash. Certainly, the Sofer said, if it was anybody else that didn't have this story with the grandfather and that, he would tell them, don't throw your money away, meaning at best what you're getting is a C-grade Sefer Torah. He said he did check into the original Sofer who wrote the Sefer Torah, and that Sofer has a reputation as an honest guy, as a good guy, but this was the second Sefer Torah he had ever written, and he obviously didn't do a great job on that Sefer Torah. But as an honest guy, that may be, if that's his reputation, an honest person doesn't allow, will not do chak tochos unless he's a total amaretz. That would. Okay, so that is that's question number one. Question number two. A fellow told me that he had set aside tzedakah money a long time ago, not given it, not set aside, because he has a relative who's been learning in Kollel for a long, long time and has lots of children that are following along in that path of learning in Kollel and whatever, of being committed to that lifestyle. And he knows that these relatives are not going to be able to afford to, pay for their wedding, the kids' weddings and the and basic expenses at the beginning of marriage. So he decided, when he was doing pretty well in business, to put aside some money in an account for years down the road when those kids grow up. And the plan originally was that he would keep adding to it every year. As business goes, it didn't he was not able to continue to add to it, but the money that he put there initially was still there. Then more recently, a different relative of his had seen an article online that was one of these blogs or something that was written by a frustrated parent of a yeshiva, day school, where the parent, I guess, is someone who makes, $250,000 a year, and all of his colleagues in the office drive fancy cars, and all the people on his level in the office go on nice vacations, drive fancy cars, are putting money away, saving money, and he's spending over $100,000 a year in tuition, and he feels like it's choking him. So he wrote this article about how we should pull all of our kids out of yeshiva and really show them, we should really teach a lesson to God, I don't know, but to somebody, and that we should. And this other relative saw that article and was so moved by it. He said, wow, that is such a great idea. So he's going to take all of his kids out of yeshiva, because it resonated with him. He too felt that way. So he decided he's going to take all of his kids out of yeshiva. So now this fellow who put aside all this money for the Kollel family, but he never told them. He never told them they put aside the money for them. Now he's thinking, maybe if he can help pay the tuitions of this other family that's about to pull the kids out of yeshiva, and it will keep the kids in the yeshiva, it will keep the kids from the... Is he allowed to divert that money from what he initially intended it to go for, to instead use it to pay the yeshiva tuition? That is shaila number two. Shaila number three. I got a call from a guy in Northern California. My brother sent this one my way. There is a a Svardi Bal Tshuva. My guess is he's in his early 30s, young guy. He, a year ago, was driving an Uber for a living, and he thought of a great idea as he was driving around in his Uber. He said, hey, why don't I start a business insulating attics? That was his plan. And he did I do this one already? No? Okay. And that was his plan. And he started and he started this business. And you know, when like insulating attics, like, I mean, it doesn't sound so brilliant to me. Like, but when you're gonna, the pitch is you're saving on your energy bills because you're gonna have better insulation in your house. And in the place, Northern California, where going green is what it's all about. It's not just saving on your energy bills; it's saving on energy consumption. So, like, you know, it's next to saving a whale. I mean, lowering your energy consumption is like the best thing you can do. So, his business took off like crazy. A year later, he's a millionaire, and he hired, and he has so much hakaras hatov to the Ribono Shel Olam for like how far he's come, and for all the brachos that have come into his life. That he gives a ton of tzedakah. Anyone in his from community who required employment, he now employs in his business. So there were like seven people in his shul that were unemployed that are now employed by him. And he decided it's not enough. He needs to give more. So he decided what he wants to give is a kidney. He's going to give a kidney to a Jew to save a Jew's life. So, and he thought that the only way to give a kidney to a Jew is by going to Israel, right? Otherwise, how do you find a Jew, right? I don't know. But he decided he was going to go to, and he was willing to do it, from Northern California, go to Israel, have the surgery in Israel, have the recovery in Israel, where he doesn't even have any relatives. He would be recovering, like, in a hotel room, you know, because he wants to give. He's interested in giving. And then someone said to him, well, why don't you just call it Renewal? Renewal is, you know, an organization in America that finds Jewish people that you can give a kidney to. Oh, he didn't know that it existed. So he called up Renewal, and Renewal said to him, oh, you know, they took his information or whatever, and they said, what are your preferences? And he said, preferences? And they said, yeah, you can choose your kidney. You can give it to whoever you want. You want to give it to a religious person, non-religious person? You know, do you want to insist on a religious person, or are you willing to give it to a non-religious person? Man or woman, you know, adult or child? Like, do you have any preferences of who you want to give it to? So he thought, that's a good shayla. Is there some sort of halachic requirement or preference in terms of what he should do with his spare kidney that he's running around with? So my brother gave him my number. He called me up to ask me that question. So those are the three questions. We have the Sefer Torah, we have the diverting tzedakah money, money earmarked for tzedakah, and we have who to give your kidney to. Three? Start with three? Okay, three is a short one, so we'll have an opportunity to do more than one tonight. Okay. What's the relevant sugya? You know? When it comes to...
Whose life you say first?
Whose life you say first? So what are the guidelines of whose life you say first? No Dafyomi people here? Submission and Horios. The very end of Masech is Horios. In the very end of Masech, no one learns Horios, just davened up Horios over Shavuos, you know. Someone told me that in their shul, they have a Masechta that they just, over the 3-day Yantif, they have like a chabur of guys that dedicates every spare moment to learning, and they learn an entire Masechta of Gemara over Yantif. I said, I love it, we're doing that next year in my shul. So I just have to figure out which Masechta. It's a great idea. Like 5 hours, what?
3 days next year too?
It's 3 days next year also, yeah, same, yeah. So it's a great idea, right? Makos may be a little ambitious, 24 blind in 3 days, maybe a little ambitious, but Horios is very hard, but a lot of words. Yeah, all right, we'll figure it out. I just love the idea, we got to do it. Anyway, so the mission in Maseches Horios tells us, and Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, Ha'ish Kodem Le'isha L'Hachios L'Hashev Aveda, that man comes before a woman when it comes lahachios to what? So it's machlokes rishonim what that means. Either it means to give food to, you know, sustenance, or it means that two people are drowning. There's a man drowning and a woman drowning, and you have the opportunity to save one or the other. Ha'ish kodem li'isha. that the man comes before the woman, lahachios and for Hashavas Aveda. But don't worry, women come take precedence for other things. Ve'isha kodemus l'ish l'chsus ulotim beis hashevi. For clothing, if both a man and a woman need clothing, you buy the woman clothing. If both a man and a woman are held captive, you release the woman from captivity. It's only if they're dying that you save the man. So, but that's the that's the, then the next mission goes on to say Kohen Kodem LeLevi, Levi LeYisrael, Yisrael LeMamzer, and it sounds like that's a continuation of the preceding Mishnah, meaning that's not about Aliyos, that's not just about being Mechabed v'Kidashto, who you're Mechabed to be Poseach Barishon. That's a separate sugya. That's a sugya Maseches Git, right? This sounds like it's in terms of Lahachios. That Kohen before Levi, Levi before Yisrael, and then of course the Mishnah tells us the famous line: "Avalim Hayyam Mamzer Tamul Chacham Kohen Gadol Am Aretz Mamzer Tamul Chacham Kodem LeKohen Gadol Am Aretz." So we do have this machlokas whether Lahachios means to feed, which is the shita of the Rashba and the Meiri, or to save from danger, which is the shita of the Beis Yosef, and it's quoted by the Shach in Yardeis Im Reish Nun Aleph Sif Katan Yud Aleph. But that just may be machlokas in interpretation, right? But certainly everyone would agree, it would seem, that if two people were drowning, that there is this din of ish kodem leisha, that two people are dying and you can save one of them, ish kodem leisha. The priority is with the man before the woman, and l'chora tamal chachum lefnei ha'maretz. So, okay, tamal chachum lefnei ha'maretz is going to be very difficult. It's going to be very difficult. You know, like that sugi in Gittin that talks about which aliyah, who gets the first aliyah, the second aliyah, v'chulei. So we sort of say, mipnei darkei shalom, the Mishnah says, mipnei darkei shalom, we just give it to a kohen. That's not really the halacha. Tamul chacham should really come before even a kohen gadol, right? If a kohen gadol amarts. So, but mipnei darkei shalom. What does it mean, mipnei darkei shalom? We're going to have fights about who's a bigger tamul chacham than who. You know, they're going to call this guy up for an aliyah, and the other guy's going to say, oh, he doesn't know what I know. Yeah, you don't need this. We don't need everyone measuring each other's tzitzis. You know, like, we just do a Kohen. You can't argue a Levi. Yeah, we just do it like that. So that way we'll avoid such things. So you could argue that when it comes to saving lives, you have a similar type of idea that you're going to have to sit there as they're drowning. Wait. Zug a Mishnah. You're not like, hey, you're going to give a Bechina, like, see who's... Who's the bigger Talmud Chacham at that time? Rav Shechter told me once that he was in the Great Synagogue, I think it was in the Great Synagogue, davening on Shabbos morning, and Rabbi Lamb was there as well. Rabbi Norman Lamb was there as well. And they gave Rav Shechter Shlishi, and Rabbi Lamb got Ravi'i. And Rav Shechter said he was embarrassed that Rabbi Lamb is his boss, Rabbi Lamb is older than him, and like he felt like, why did they give me Shlishi? Only Rav Shechter would think like that. It's probably because you're a Shechter, you know, like, but he's embarrassed. How could they give me Shlishi over Rabbi Lamb? But he didn't know what to say. So Rabbi Lamb, he said, got up to the Torah, turned to the Gabbai, and said, what bracha do you make on Ravi? I never got Ravi before. Yeah, it broke the ice. But when it comes to these things, to saving life, okay, you're not going to measure Talmud Chacham. But one thing you know, Machal Shabbos Farasi wouldn't have the status of Talmud Chacham. So you would think at least a Shomer Shabbos before a non-Shomer Shabbos. You're not going to check Kohen Kodem Levi. Who knows? He doesn't have a Ksav Yichus to be Chavla Achrini. I'm going to trust his Yichus at someone else's expense, at someone else's life. Maybe not. Maybe I don't trust his Yichus. But you know if someone's a Shomer Shabbos or not a Shomer Shabbos. So why is it that like in a hospital, we don't do this? Right, you're a frum doctor working in a hospital. It's a Mishnah that says you're supposed to favor, you know, certain people over others when there's so you're working in the emergency room and things are moving fast. So a yarmulke and drop everything and go to the yarmulke. Why don't we do that?
They wouldn't have the job.
Yeah, you lose your job like the next day. It's a violation of like probably lots of laws, and there will be, you'd probably lead to riots and pogroms and, you know, like terrible things against the Jewish people, right? That doesn't apply over here. Renewal is an organization run by Hasidim and other religious Jews. There's a guy that used to work here in Landon that now works in the old Rabbi Mannheim. The guy who used to do Rabbi Mannheim's job is now works in Renewal. He's not a Chassid, but I'm saying it's mostly Chassidim, and And no one has to know, and you're under no obligation to give your kidney to anybody, right? No one. So it's not like you're a doctor working in a hospital where you have to give medical care to somebody. So you want to give it to a family member, give it to a family member. You want to give it to a friend, give it to a friend. You want to give it to a stranger, give it to a stranger. Whatever. No one's going to have any tainas on you. In fact, I always had a kasha. Like I used to think when I would hear like Renewal going around, you know, talking about the organization, how they do kidney donations for the Jewish community. I thought, like, is that like a chilul Hashem that the non-Jews aren't getting, you know, kidney? It turns out it's the opposite. It's the greatest kiddush Hashem, because it's been an inspiration. There's a doctor in Cornell, an African American fellow, Dr. Watkins, who's a kidney surgeon. He does the transplants. He's a kidney transplant surgeon, and he's kept on seeing all these from Jews coming in, giving their kidneys mostly to. Not from Jews, but to other Jews, you know, not mostly, but, you know, indiscriminately to other Jews. And he said, this is unbelievable what that community, and he tried to start the same thing in Harlem. He tried to start the same thing in an African-American community, meaning it's been an inspiration for others. It hasn't been a chilul Hashem. It's been an example of look what a community can do when they galvanize people to do things like this. So no one will ever know, except for the Hasidish guy in Renewal that you talk to on the phone, no one will ever know that you decided that you only wanted to go to a male Kohen Talmud Chacham. No one will ever know. So there's no Chilul Hashem issue. Right? So is there any reason not to insist on that? So I thought, absolutely not. In fact, not only did I think not to insist on it, the thought never even crossed my mind that one should insist on it. And I've thought about this. Right. Well, no, I shouldn't say not to insist on giving it to a specific person. If you have a family member, certainly to give to them, or you have someone you know, a friend or something. But if you're going to give it to a stranger, and the thought never even crossed my mind to follow the mission in Horius. And I had a svara, and I was I thought the svara was correct. When I was in Eretz Yisrael, I asked Rav Nevenzahl if my svara was correct. I didn't even tell him my svara. I asked Rav Nevenzahl. He said the same svara as me, and passing that way. So I was like, okay, all happy. Baruch Shekivanti. The next day, I went to Rav Zilberstein. So now that I knew it was a good svara, I told it to Rav Zilberstein. He said, nope. Incorrect. did not accept that svara. And then last night I happened to see Rabbi Rav Willig at a chasana, and I asked him what he thought, and he also thought that my svara was correct. He said it on his own, and then he added another svara. So what's the svara? The svara is very, very basically as follows: when you see the Mishnah Horias, that you see two people drowning, they're both drowning. So you have to save one, and you may lose the other while you're saving one, or you may not, maybe you have time for both, but you have to be makdim one over the other, right? What if, though, we change the case just a bit? What if there are two people that are in the water, but one of them is, what was the guy with all those gold medals? You know, Michael Phelps, right? One of them is Michael Phelps, and he's going and going. There's no way out. He's got no way out of the water unless someone comes and saves him eventually. But he'll go for a while. You know, he's okay for a while. And then you have someone else, you know, a woman flailing, and it looks like she's about to go down. And you know that there's a whole bunch of other people that are going to be coming along past the river, a whole bunch of other certified lifeguards, not just you, that are going to be coming along past the river. So in that case, do you say Ish Kodem Leisha? L'chora not, right? Because there's one clear greater tzorech, and the other person's probably going to be saved anyway. Right? So you would go with whoever has the much greater need. I mean, just like triage in an emergency room. That if you have a person who, if you don't pay attention to them right now, they're going to die. And another person who has a little boo-boo, but, you know, they could wait a while and nothing's going to happen. So you have to prioritize. So similarly, I think the halacha would be the same. That was my story. What happens if you don't tell them a specific preference? They'll give it to the person who's been on the list the longest, the person who needs it the most. And that's how they're going to prioritize. So I said that svara, Rav Nevenzahl said that svara, he agreed. The halacha seems to be this way as well. You know, there's a halacha, for example, that the Rishonim point out that if a man is able to be chozer al psachim, then the woman should come first for support. Meaning, because his need's not as great as her need. right? If he's able to be chazal b'sachman, he's able to go door to door and collect, and he'll get supported that way. And she's unable to do that, so his need is her need becomes a greater need, and mela you give to her first. There is a tshuva in the Yad Eliyahu in Simon Mem Gimel where he thinks that even if the man is only in Suffolk Sakana and the woman is in Vadai Sakana, we would still save the man before the woman. But then he says Sarachi in Ladina, and I would think it's more than Sarachi in Ladina. I would think that that's not correct, that we do not assume that way La Halacha. If Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva in Chosha Mishpachel Beis Simonayim Gimel that in a triage situation it's better to save the person who can be saved rather than a person who you may only be giving chayishah to, meaning all I'm trying to show is Rav Moshe has a long tshuva about triage, about who you treat first when there are different, and he has all sorts of criteria without ever mentioning Kohen Kodem Levi, Levi Yisrael, you know, Tam Chacham Kodem Le. He discusses where the greatest need is or where the greatest benefit is, all the classic things you'd expect to be discussed in these contexts. You know where he finally mentions the idea of that Mishnah in Horios? He says like this. He says, if people come into an emergency room, this is a tshuva to Rabbi Tendler, to his son-in-law, v'tzarech harofe lelech l'misha nikra tchila. The doctor has to go to the person that called first, ulumisha karov l'beiso yosar, or is closer, ukshashavin bazeh, when everything else is equal, sarach lahaktim lefi seder mashnisin dahorios yud gimlam l'alef. Only when everything else is equal, then you go with the Mishnah and Horios. But if everything else is not equal, you don't go with the Mishnah and Horios. That's what Rav Moshe writes explicitly in a tshuva, and that's what I thought was correct. Rabbi Willig said the same svara, and then he just added. He added that when a person wants to be a kidney donor, there is a psychological benefit to feeling that to feeling like they saved a life, to feeling like they've made a maximum impact. So if you're going to tell them to give it to someone who's not that sick, who doesn't, you know, hasn't spent a day on dialysis, doesn't really, hasn't really suffered that much, it may have a negative impact on the donor, and he deserves to have the positive experience of feeling like he's done the greatest mitzvah. Okay, yeah, nish. That really depends on the donor. Some donors just don't want to know. They just say, "This is my mitzvah. This is, I'm doing what I can do, and that's it. I don't need to know anything else." And they're just totally fine with that. So it's, you know, maybe yeah, maybe no. But that's so okay. So what was Rav Zilberstein's taina? So I said this to Rav Zilberstein. I said, Svara, whoever needs the most. He said, "No, the Mishnah in Horio says it's a bigger mitzvah to save a man than to save a woman. What are you talking about?" So so I said, "Really? So the guy has to save the man?" He says, "No, I didn't say he has to save the man." He said, "He doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to give a kidney. There's no requirement to do that. It's a bigger mitzvah to save the man than to save the woman. It's a bigger mitzvah to save the Talmud Chacham than to save the non-Talmud Chacham." By the way, why is it a bigger mitzvah to save the man? It sounds so wrong, no? You're right, it sounds very chauvinistic. More mitzvahs. That's what all the Rishonim say. It's chayvin more mitzvahs. It's all about, it's a numbers game. And that's why they say better to save a bar das than a shota. It's because he's bar chiyuv and mitzvahs. Which is, again, I believe when everything else is equal, right? When they're not, you know, your friend, your neighbor, your relative, when they're not, someone who's in greater need, when everything else is equal. But Rav Zilberstein says, it's a bigger mitzvah. He said, but you don't have to do a bigger mitzvah. You want to do a smaller mitzvah, you can do a smaller mitzvah. Harashos piyado, to do a smaller mitzvah, if you want to do a small, but you only got one kidney, so, you know, you may want to choose to do the bigger mitzvah one extra kidney. If you have one kidney, don't give it away. But if you have one extra kidney, so you should do the bigger, you know, you may want to choose to do the bigger mitzvah. If you want to choose to do a smaller mitzvah with your kidney, that's fine as well. So I told Rav Zilberstein, maybe there's another svara to give to someone who's not religious, because I said that someone I know, someone very close to me, who donated a kidney to a non-religious person, and they got a call from Renewal about a week after they donated that the recipient, who's a non-religious man, on his way, not yet observant, however Rabbi Teller likes to, right, not yet observant. So on his way back from the hospital, he stopped by his store to buy himself a pair of tefillin. So I said, you can make such an impact that the guy knew that an Orthodox person, you know, who he doesn't know, who just gave him a kidney, and he had such a karas hatov. So what did Zilberstein say? Tell him he should write a letter to the recipient that it's very nice that he did tefillin. I don't want my kidney being mechal Shabbos. he said, once you have him, you can make demands. So I'm like, I don't know how politically correct that is, but that was his immediate thought that they should write such a letter. Okay, so that was that. Those were the thoughts. So I told this fellow from California that he should not give any preferences. Just say, I want to give to a Jew, because you're allowed to give to family instead of non-family. The Jewish people are family. Rav Asher Weiss has said recently that we not only have an obligation to love Jews, we have an obligation to love people, to love, he said, not just to respect, to love non-Jews as well. But the Jewish people are family, so family comes first. And you have the opportunity to give to family, you give to family, but you don't ask questions in family, right? If Rachman son, someone's father needs a kidney, he doesn't say, well, Dad, you know, when I was 12, you grounded me for, you know, I don't like the way you handled this situation. You don't judge when it's family. When it's family, you just give. So that's what I told this fellow. I didn't think it was right to insist on one thing or the other. They have, the organization happens to have a posek to deal with, you know, touchy shailas that come up. Rabbi Olbam, from right down the block here, is a massive Talmud Chacham who's the posek for the organization. They once had a shaila, they told me, they once had a shaila where they called, some, there was a clerical error, and the kidney came in, and they called someone who would be a match for it. But that person that they called the wrong person. Instead of calling a person who had been on the list for like 2 years, they called someone who had gone on the list a day before. And they said, we have a kidney for you. Oh, we have a kidney for you. And then they realized, like an hour later, that they made a mistake. So what do you do now? Do you say, just kidding, maybe next time? Or do you give it to them? So Rabbi Olbam passed him to give it to them. That's an interesting shaila. Rabbi Zilberstein has that shaila in a different context, where a yeshiva has applicants and they can only accept so many kids, and they accidentally send out, you know, normally the yeshiva sends out an acceptance letter and a waitlist letter. I don't think most yeshivas have a rejection letter. There's an acceptance letter and there's a waitlist letter. So they accidentally sent out all acceptances, and you know, all these kids that otherwise wouldn't have gotten in. So do you have to now honor it? So I would argue yes. You got to figure it out if that's what you did, if you sent that extra acceptances. Okay, so that was shaila number 3. That took a little longer than I thought. So, but we still have like 10 minutes left for one or two. Which one?
Two.
Okay, the stucker one. So the stucker one, my knee-jerk reaction, my immediate response was, and I got to stop doing this with knee-jerk reactions, but my immediate response was that, yeah, you can do it. It's fine. And the more I thought about it, the less certain I am about it. Why? What do we need to figure out over here? So what happened? The fellow never told the Kolo family that he put money aside for them. He never told them. All he did was he put money in accounts. In fact, he never told anybody except for me when he asked me the first time if he can use Meiser money to fill that account. And I said, yes, because you're earmarking it for tzedakah. But that was the only time he ever even mentioned what the intent was with the money. So there was never a guarantee made to anybody, which is an interesting thing, because if there was a guarantee made to somebody, then you're probably not, then it's probably, there's a Mordechai like that there was a Din Torah in the 13th century where an Ani said to an Ashir, you promised me that you're going to give me money. He didn't claim that he actually owed him money for anything. He just said, you promised me you're going to give me money. And they made him take a Shavuos Hesis. And he said, no, I never promised it. And they made him take a Shavuos Hesis. Without a Shavua, he was Mechuyav to pay it, because he promised the money to Tzedakah. But that's only if you guarantee to the person. So, you know, the issue is, the status of a neder to tzedakah. Is this considered like a neder to give to tzedakah? And then, once it's a neder to tzedakah, are you allowed to divert money from one tzedakah to the other? Just in case I forget to say it later, as an eitzah, it's probably always best, until the money is in the hands of the recipient, to always attach a big fat tenai to any money that you ever put aside for anything. And that includes, most commonly, you're in shul, and some guy comes in collecting tzedakah, you stick your hands in your pocket for when he comes around to you, and somehow you give the impression that you're davening with so much kavana that he doesn't even bother you, and he walks out of shul. And meanwhile, you have a dollar in your hand, in your pocket, that you intended to give to this fellow. So now you're not allowed to give it to anybody else but to that fellow, but you can't even find him. It causes all sorts of problems. So much, much better to have in mind that everything is, you know, bitnai, that it's nothing until it's in the hands of the recipient, that it is not tzedakah until it's in the hands of the recipient. That's what we would definitely suggest. But short of that, right, can you divert tzedakah money? There's a Mishnah in the fourth parak of Maseches Megillah that says that if you sell a rechova shel ir, a town square, you can buy a beis haknesses. You sell a Torah, you're not allowed to buy svarim, right? That's the notion of malim b'kodesh v'lo maridin. That Rashi says, machru svarim v'lochu mi miktsas hadamim Torah, lo yachu min amoser davar shekdushas b'chusa. That if you sold svarim and some of the money went to pay for a Torah and now there's extra, you're still not allowed to use that money for something that's on a lower level. The money can't be used for a lesser kedusha. However, the Gemara in Daf Chav Zayin in Megillah says, lo shanu ela shemachru vahosiru, aval gavu vahosiru moter. That's only if you sold something that had elevated kedusha and then there was something left over. But if you collected money for the sake of Sefer Torah, and it turned out you got more money than you needed for the Sefer Torah, then it's going to be mutter. If people gave money for one purpose, though, that's different. And you want to use it for a different purpose, that may be something else. Meaning, in the case where you collect money for a Sefer Torah, and there's extra money, so you're allowed to use it because everyone is giving al-das anshei ha'ir. That's how the Mishnah Berurah explains in Kufnun Gimel Sifkat Yudalit. The das of the anshei ha'ir is that it's al-das legabei tzedakah. That they're giving with the assumption that he'll use it for what he said, and then if there's extra, that happens all the time. I think when Rabbi Tzvi Hirschweiner was running the OU, he collected money for Hurricane Katrina or something. You know, they sent out an OU email, and tons of money came pouring in, and they had more than what was needed. So they had a major shiloh. What do you do with that money? So the assumption is that you can do something with that money. Someone else told me they were in Einstein Medical School, and every Shabbos they would take out another, this is years ago, every Shabbos they would take out a Sefer Torah and find the psul. Every Shabbos. Because where did they get their Sefer Torah in Einstein? From all the shuls in the Bronx that closed down, and they had nothing to do with the Sefer Torah. They just all dumped them in Einstein. But these were old, bad Sefer Torah. So every single one, so they decided all these young doctors were going to get, young medical students who have no money, they were going to get together and they were going to try to buy a Sefer Torah. So they all put their money together and they collected X number of thousands of dollars, and then one of them said, oh, my family has a Sefer Torah, we'll be happy to donate it. And they donated it. Now they had all this money they were sitting on, you know, so what do? So there is an assumption that when you're collecting, that you're collecting al-das the anshei ha'ir, but that doesn't seem to help in a situation where the money is still needed by the original, you know, place you wanted to give the money. I mean, it's not like that. All of these discussions are where the money is no longer needed because it's been taken care of by some other source. But when it hasn't been taken care of by any other source, so that's a little bit trickier. So I was thinking along a few different lines. First of all, is it so pashut that this is tzedakah in either sense? I mean, right now, the Kolo family has food to put on the table, right? So I said, yeah, you could use Ma'aser K'safim to ultimately pay for their weddings. But we don't know, their weddings are, you know, in the distant future. So when he gives it, he will get the mitzvah. You're allowed to use ma'aser money because you can designate ma'aser money tzedakah without actually giving it. Like if you put your ma'aser money in a ma'aser account, I don't think you have to give it each month or year or whatever, as long as eventually it goes to tzedakah. I think that would be good enough. But it certainly hasn't been nicknays by tzedakah. No one has been kona it yet. The question is, are you bound by that neder in your mind, which is not even a verbal neder, you know, that it happens to be, it's a machlokas rishonim. The Gemara in Shavuos Daf Chavav says that in order for a neder to be chal, you need to be motzi b'sfasav, you need to say the words. Just thinking it doesn't make it a neder. If it's never verbalized, it's not a neder, except when the Torah uses the term nedivlev. And where does the Torah use the term nedivlev? By kachim and by truma. So therefore, the Beis Yosef and the Chumash Rosh and the Rambam all paskin that tzedakah is not kachim, tzedakah is not truma, and therefore just a thought is not, does not bind you in any way. However, the Daki Moshe quotes a Mordechai that tzedakah is the same as kachim, and therefore if you don't verbalize it, even a machshava could be mechayiv you. And Yardeis and Rishon Lechester Amar writes im chishev belibo liten is a davar letzedakah chayiv chayiv lekayiv machshava. So you have to be mechayim your machshava alone. You don't need to say anything. Or they say the Pesach of Kraksa Kofen also the Kayim. If you actually say it, then we could even be Kofa, because now we know that you're Chayiv. If it's only in your head, only you know that you're Chayiv. But if you say it, we can actually be forced, we can force the tzedakah out of you. However, the Ramah quotes the Yesh Omrim that if you didn't verbalize anything, then it's nothing. But the Ramah says, Ikr Kisfar Arishona. So Pesach Yitzchak quotes a Chuvas Eish Das that disagrees with the Ramah, thinks the Ramah is totally off base. But we assume like the Ramah. So even just a mental commitment to tzedakah is a commitment to give tzedakah. And it's not so pashut that you're allowed to divert from one tzedakah to the other. So what would be the svara to be makel? So the svara to be makel would either be that a mental commitment to tzedakah is a neder to give tzedakah, but a mental commitment that it's going to go to that place does not necessarily mean that it's nikna to that place. It's you b'toras neder, but it's not the recipient b'toras kinyan. So it could be that a mental commitment to person A is just commits you to that amount of money for tzedakah, but does not commit you to give to person A. I'm not convinced of that, but that's a possibility. It could also be that, you know, keeping kids in yeshiva is like a pikuach nefesh type of situation in terms of their basic frumkeit. You know, there's all sorts of things that they could pick up if they're not in yeshiva. So it could be that it could also be and likely will be that if you were to tell the Kolo family, look, I have news for you. I put aside money for your kids for later in life. Right now, our other relative is going to send their kids to public school unless we do something about it. So it's not unreasonable to assume that they would say, you know, we didn't even know about this money, you know, so it's no loss to us as far as our, you know, as far as what we knew. So go ahead, do what's needed now. We have bitachon. We live our entire lives with bitachon. We have bitachon that things will be okay in the future. Maybe. But the easiest way out is to have that conversation. Say, oh yeah, by the way, I put aside X number of dollars for your kids, but right now, you know, it seems that, so up to you. Just leave the ball in their court might be a better etza. As it turned out, it wasn't shaykh. The money was not going to be accepted by the other family anyhow, so it wasn't relevant. My knee jerk reaction was that it's definitely mutter. I'm not so convinced. I did not have a chance to discuss it with the Gedolei Poskim. Okay, have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody.